You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Pick My Brain is the podcast where founders pitch me their startup and I try to give them some useful advice so they can connect better with potential co-founders, investors, media, and of course, customers. My name's Alan Jones and I was a founder myself for about 15 years, and after that an angel investor for another 15 years, so yeah, old. Some of my ventures have been successful and some failed disastrously, but I like to think I've learned a thing or two along the way, and maybe some of that can help you. So if you'd like to learn how to tweak your pitch, subscribe to the Pick My Brain show now, wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
So what we found was sort of the same scenario playing out time and again, where people were getting themselves into a pickle, where had they known this information sort of ahead of time, that they would have very likely been able to avoid some bad situations.
Welcome to FinTech Fun. FinTech Fun is a podcast where Australian fintechs come to share their stories.
That's Chris Titley here. As part of the FinTech Fun podcast, we're here with Patrick Schweizer, the co-founder of Alares. Thanks for coming into the office and checking out this cool studio that we've got going on here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chris. It's a very cool setup for anyone who hasn't seen it yet.
Now, Patrick, Alares, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, Alares.
Alares. A name that's probably not so familiar with the Brisbane startup scene, but certainly very well established. Can you talk us about what the platform is and the product is and how it all began?
Yeah, absolutely. So we started a few years ago, and basically we identified a pretty glaring gap in credit report data, information that people were getting from credit reports in and around court information. So basically, within existing credit reports, pretty much all court matters currently on foot will not appear in a credit report. But equally, most prior court matters will also not appear in credit reports, and we can sort of get into the details. But the classic sort of scenario is if I'm a company or an individual and I rock up to a bank or a trade credit provider or whoever it might be looking for credit, if I'm currently getting sued in the Supreme Court for $1 million, that the fact that I'm getting sued will just not appear on my credit file anyway.
Mm.
And if I was previously sued, that will almost always not appear either. And so what we found was sort of the same scenario playing out time and again, where people were getting themselves into a pickle, where had they known this information sort of ahead of time, that they would have very likely been able to avoid some bad situations.
A couple of questions on that. One being the idea that this information is public in its own right. How do you access that information as a member of the public? And then second to that, some industries that you're involved in.
Yeah, so all of the information that we provide is ultimately in the public domain, albeit it's very disparate, sort of sitting in different court registries all over the country. even within sort of a given city or state, each courthouse will have its own sort of system and registry. There's no real standardisation or rhyme or reason to any of the data. So we've gone through the effort of actually pulling that all together, systematising it, standardising it, and aggregating all of it into our own platform, where people can sort of far more readily and easily access it. Where, in theory, if you know, with pen and paper and enough sort of time and will, you could travel around the country and replicate it. But you know, it just becomes time and cost prohibitive.
It's a very niche idea, but certainly very effective. How did you go about starting the idea? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, so my background's all been in technology development, commercialization. So I did engineering sort of by trade. And my whole career has been focused on sort of tech startups, tech commercialization, and you know, business development and actually taking new tech to market. So when my co-founder came across this gap, it was a bit of a come to Jesus moment where we said, look, this is a big opportunity, good opportunity. Why don't we jump in sort of with both feet and see where we can take it?
And that moment of going full-time into the business, the first day, the first customer, can you take me back there to that time where you created a name and a website and a few different things?
Yeah, so look, day one, we all had day jobs. And this was sort of, you know, get out of bed at 3 a.m. and put a solid 3-4 hours into it before the kids wake up and before
side hustle.
Exactly. Yeah, before the madness sort of started in the school run. So there was a lot of late nights, early mornings, just putting the time in where we could to sort of build out the concept. And to build basically, you know, an MVP. We then, through our own sort of contacts, were able to pitch that to, a number of would-be customers to say, hey, look, here's a concept. What do you think? They were very helpful to, point us in the right direction in terms of sort of usability and how they would actually want to, digest the data and how to sort of format it and present it in the most usable way. So we just sort of went down that path. Obviously it always takes a lot longer and costs more than even your most conservative sort of estimate. But we just sort of chipped away at that and persevered. And then I gave up my day job, at the point where we actually had money coming through the door and we could see that this thing had legs.
And the model behind it is a subscription model, I take it?
Yeah, so we do either pay-as-you-go or set monthly subscription, and it really comes down to the customer's preference. What we find on the professional services side, people tend to want to just pay as they go. I've got sort of 10 jobs on, I've run 10 searches, and I want to pay X amount for that. For bigger, higher volume users, they tend to want to just lock in a fixed monthly fee to get an all-you-can-eat type arrangement.
And the data, how often is it updated in the database and how relevant and current is it?
Yeah, so we update all of our data daily, in some instances a couple of times a day. So all of our data is effectively real-time to the day, so if something gets filed in court today, depending on when all the different databases update, you know, you would expect to see it sort of by tomorrow at the latest.
And the industry use for your data, can you talk about that and the types of businesses that use it and then also how helpful it is from their point of view from a tangible benefit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the biggest use case for us is on the credit side. So any type of credit provider, whether it's a big bank or a specialist lender, or it might be a material supplier to the building industry who's selling to a bunch of builders and subbies, anybody extending credit has use for our product where we just provide a much more complete picture on potential risk when customers knock on the door looking for credit. Outside of that, we also work with a lot of law firms, automating their court searches that they do as a part of their process. And we also work with a number of audit firms as well. Again, as a part of their sort of standard audit process where they have to comment on litigation that their audit clients are involved in.
And the feedback that you get from those customers on the product side and the use cases, I know every customer will be different in terms of their broader use. I mean, how do you manage that with you know, the one size fits all?
Yeah, look, we get a lot of really positive feedback from all our different verticals, if you will. You know, we get many, many case studies almost on a weekly basis where, you know, a recent one that there was a specialist small business lender. They had a new deal come across their table. The credit report was completely clear, lots of green ticks, high credit score. Sort of ticked every box, that there was nothing that stood out there at all as any potential risk. When they ran our report, they could see that this particular would-be borrower had been sued six times previously, sort of in recent years by sort of in quick succession by different lenders. And, you know, in sort of district courts and Supreme Court, so getting sued for a lot of money in each case. You know, nowhere to be seen on the credit report. So had they not run our report, they would have been blissfully unaware that that this entity had a pretty sordid track record of paying back their lenders. And so they sent us a nice message saying, look, you know, we've your report has sort of, you know, potentially helped us save a very sort of large whoopsie here, where we would have very likely ended up being, you know, the seventh name on the list in time to come, having to take this borrower to court for not getting paid.
And the data that you receive, there's different courts, there's different states, there's different company names and different reasons for being in court. Can you come up with, you know, some sort of score or check to say what's sort of okay, good, not bad, indifferent, unavoidable, etc.?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at our platform, just ingesting the data is sort of, you know, a small part of the overall process. The bigger part of the process is standardising all of the data, given that every court's completely different. We then do all sorts of checks and sort of cleansing of the data to make sure that it's accurate and correct. And then when people run reports against companies in particular, we will provide what we have coined our insolvency risk factor. And what that effectively is, it's an analytics model that works backwards from all recent corporate insolvencies, and it looks at what prior court matters they were involved in. And it factors in basically all the different attributes that we can sort of get out of our data. So were they the plaintiff or the defendant? What court was it in? What was the matter in relation to? You know, how long ago was it? How many matters were there? What was the sort of sequence and the combination? So it factors all that into basically a score, if you will, where on a simple red, yellow, green scale, you can see what our rating is as to the, you know, the severity of this.
And the customers, in regards to making those decisions on basis of clients, you got a nice little note the other day. What do other companies come back to you and say, look, Patrick, we were about to do this deal, but we just ran your last check, and you know, thankfully we've picked up on some anomalies and we've gone back to the client, and you know, they're all true and correct, and we're not going to do the deal. But and thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's quite funny. One of a little while ago, one of our customers who signed up, the very first report they ran showed up something that looked quite sinister, and they sent the report through, and they said, "Look, this has come up. What should I do?" And so I called him up and I said, look, you're an unsecured lender. The reason why you have chosen to use this product is to help you identify red flags and issues. This one, at least to me, looks pretty serious. You know, again, you've got no security in this loan. If it was my money, I would not be, I would not be sort of handing it out very freely. So this lender decided to not do the deal, and about a month later he got a notice saying that this particular borrower had just gone into liquidation. And so he sent a note and said, look, you've just saved me, you know, X tens of thousands of dollars that I literally would have torn up, you know, had I provided this loan.
And, mate, I've followed the progress of your company for a couple of years now, 3 or 4 years, and you're generally under the radar a little bit. How do you find the Brisbane startup scene per se? You've been in startups most of your life, and you're sort of coming out a little bit now out of your shell into what you're doing, and the growth of the business seems very, very solid. Talk us about that progress of marketing, I suppose, broader to different verticals as opposed to inbound.
Yeah, so look, we took a very different approach to a lot of startups in that we self-funded our business from day one. So that sort of in the early days, that limited how much we could do and how quickly we could do it. But I think what it did is it gave us really a laser sort of focus on only doing the things that were most likely to actually lead to an outcome. And we've maintained, I think, that focus all along. So now that the business is profitable, it's growing well, it's paying us, it's paying all the bills, we've maintained really a laser focus on only doing things, that have a very good chance of getting a good outcome. I've seen the flip side of that where startups, almost to their sort of own detriment, ultimately have raised too much money too early, and due to the fact that they had a pile of money sitting in a bank account, they quickly found a way to spend it. But in hindsight, you could look at it and say, look, they probably didn't spend that really as well as they could have. Or instead of sort of focusing on one thing and doing it well, they ended up doing 10 different things and bit off more than they can chew. So I think we're a little bit different, in terms of how we've gone about it and continue to go about it. But it's worked for us. Sort of at least on a weekly basis, we would get together and sort of go, look, are we still doing this the right way? Are we still comfortable with how we're doing this? Should we go and raise money? Should we not? And each time we did that weekly review, we sort of invariably decided to stay the course. So glad ultimately that we did. But there were certainly plenty of times, especially early on, where you've got sort of your own money going out, not a whole lot coming in, and you kind of scratch your head going, geez, what are we doing here?
And then obviously that laser focus that you mentioned in regards to product and research and development, the new effort and time in terms of developing the suites and the tools and the data behind it has to be really focused on your own money. If you did have a pile of money, hypothetically, is there a way that you think you could spend it?
Yeah, look, it's a good question, and that's sort of what I always ask myself was, if I had, an extra $1 million sitting in the bank account, what would I actually go and do with it? And absolutely, I'd soon go and spend it, but I was never convinced along our path that money would be spent necessarily very productively. And that's why we always, chose not to go down that path. Here today, if we had more money sitting in the account, I'm sure we could go and do a whole bunch of stuff. But I think we're tracking in a really good, sort of way at the moment. There's sort of plenty coming in each month to fund what we want to do. So,
and then putting the blinkers on for 12 months time or 18 months time, where we sit back here and do a repeat conversation. Where do you want to see the business? What do you want to see the business look like? And from a product point of view and from a customer vertical point of view.
Yeah, so two key focuses for us. One on the product side, we're very actively looking for new and more detailed and better data sets to add into the mix. So we've done a nice job, I think, on the court data side, but there's plenty of other relevant data out there as well that we can add into that to make it even more sort of useful and relevant for our customers. So that's a big push for us. Along the same lines, continuing to update and evolve our analytics models, where the idea is we don't want to provide somebody with sort of a telephone book full of data. We really want to provide them with a very clear, concise, actionable insight. So it's about how do you take the reams of data and turn it into something useful. That's on the product side. On the marketing side, for us, it's really just a matter of getting our name out there, getting in front of more customers, and just basically continuing to build our customer base.
A lot of people, when they start something, they think about the global market. They think about how to participate overseas, being local here in Australia, test the product here locally, see if it works. But if it doesn't go overseas, if it does go overseas, have you ever thought about that from your point of view, or are there any competitors overseas that you have seen and watched do what you do in their own market? Do you think it's worthwhile looking at?
Yeah, look, certainly there are opportunities overseas, and it is something that we have looked at and continue to look at. I think that the reality for us is if we were to do that properly, then that would be a scenario where we would have to go and raise money to really sort of make a big splash and to do that, in a quick and effective way. So at the moment, we're still very much focused on Australia. We've got, we've really just scratched the surface in terms of the market opportunity and potential here. So I think we'll probably spend a little bit more time locally building our business here, but certainly internationals definitely on the radar.
One last question in regards to a piece of advice or a piece of business acumen that you advise to and you'd like to share with other potential startup founders. Is there something which you continually do on a daily practice or a big longer term vision goal?
Look, I think the biggest thing for us was to keep vetting the idea and the concept. It's easy to sort of fall in love with an idea and, well, this is my idea, so it must be the greatest thing in the world. But you want to keep, vetting that and testing it to see, I think it's great, but does anyone else actually think it's great? And would anyone else be willing to part with their money to buy it? That's sort of a really important one. And beyond that, once you've convinced yourself that, yes, this does have legs and you're not the only person in the world who thinks it's good, the key advice would be to just keep backing yourself and keep staying the course. It's I don't know too many startups who sort of started and on day one or day two they started raking in the cash. It's a very long, sort of arduous process. It's not for the faint-hearted, and the reality is you're probably going to sort of do it tough for a little while before you end up seeing the benefits.
Patrick, thanks so much for coming into the studio today and telling the story about from where you came from and how you're going as a business. Congratulations on what you've achieved thus far and really look forward to catching up.
Yeah, pleasure, Chris. Thanks very much for having me.
For more information on Sub11, jump onto our LinkedIn or email me, chris@sub11.com.au. Thanks for listening.
Listen to the Unfunded podcast brought to you by the Day One Network and hosted by me, tech writer Joan Westenberg. We're sharing the no-holds-barred, untold stories from entrepreneurs who have decided to build a business on their terms. I'll be interviewing successful founders and operators on the grit and ingenuity it takes to build and scale independent startups without the support of traditional venture capital funding. Subscribe to the Unfunded podcast now, wherever you get your podcasts.